Prime Time Replay from Money FM 89.3.
Let's talk casinos for ladies and gentlemen. And what an interesting last couple of days it's been with the announcement of more than 9 billion Singapore dollars being poured into the two integrated resorts here in Singapore. I'm talking about the Marina Bay Sands and Genting Singapore's Sentosa Resorts. But there's also a couple of wrinkles there. For one, the entry fee levies have been raised. And there seems to be the move to introduce a new tax structure that could raise taxes for casinos in Singapore come 2022. A short-term pain perhaps might lead to long-term gains. But again, it's something we'll have to ask folks who closely monitor the casino industry. Well, we have on the line today with us from Macau, Grant Govertson. He is a gaming analyst over at Union Gaming, and he's been more than happy to sit down with us and talk to us about how they're viewing all of these changes in the gaming industry in Singapore, as well as to talk to us about the dynamics across the region. Grant, thanks for joining us today.
Great. Thank you, JP.
It's been a couple of days. You've seen the details. I believe it's about 9 billion Singapore dollars being poured into the two integrated resorts, including Genting. But it seems that the government, as you mentioned, it might be raising taxes by 2022 and also raising the entry fee levies. What is the overall impact now on Genting Singapore, given all of these factors? Because the government has said that they might be expecting more revenues from some of their non-gaming investments, which they're hoping they will actually plow into in the next couple of years.
Sure. Well, quite frankly, at least as it relates to Genting Singapore, I think the government got the better end of this deal. And I think that goes without saying, considering the reaction in the stock price of Genting Singapore, which is, you know, down sharply on the news. They basically have to put $4.5 billion into the ground and face a higher entry levy, as you mentioned, and higher taxes. And they're also just not quite as good an operator as Marina Bay Sands. So I think it's really a tough going for RWS, especially with the immediate increase in the entry levy.
What do you think would be the incentive for MBS or Genting Singapore to go into this investment? Is extending the exclusivity license 2030 perhaps enough for them to justify this investment?
I think it must have been, but you know, quite frankly, we never thought there was much risk of the government issuing a new license anyway. So it seems like, to an extent, they traded for something they were going to get anyways, namely exclusivity. But that's just the way it is. Now, it's not clear how much of a choice they had in the matter either. Right now, obviously, Marina Bay has been trying to expand for quite some time, needing more hotel rooms. Genting's been much more quiet on that front. So, you know, I think that Marina Bay was probably a lot more gung-ho about this than RWS. But at the same time, I think the government needed to give broadly equal treatment to both. And so hence, we've got the extension of both, and both are expected to increase their expenditures. Now, I guess what we should say, though, too, is, you know, I said broadly equal simply because in exchange for that same $4.5 billion investment, Marina Bay actually gets to operate more gaming positions than does Resorts World. So, you know, again, I think most of this, you know, this new framework seems to be more beneficial for MBS than RWS.
And the other thing that the government mentioned also is that they're trying to at least promote or encourage both MBS and Genting Singapore to expand and create more non-gaming related attractions and operations. They've said that it's to help diversify the sources of revenue and income in the gaming and in the leisure and tourism industry here. Is that the right move? I mean, from what you see with regards to the gaming industry, is that the trend right now? Or is more income or revenue actually starting to be generated from some of these non-gaming related options? Or is gaming still the bread and butter of these IRs?
Great question. Look, the reality is gaming is the bread and butter of the IRs. However, I think in this case, the government in Singapore actually made an astute move. And what I mean by that is, even though revenues will still be primarily driven by the casino floor, the more sophisticated Chinese customer these days, and again, let's be honest, they're the ones who are the engine of most of the casinos in Asia, they're becoming more sophisticated, and so they're actually demanding more non-gaming and high-quality non-gaming amenities, and that's actually driving their decision to go to either one casino over another or one city over another. So, in order to maintain its competitive edge, I think actually it is imperative for the two IRs cards in Singapore to invest heavily in non-gaming, you know, not only to just maintain, but to grow the current base of customers.
So, Grant, given all of that, I do want to get Union Gaming's take on Genting Singapore. Six of the other investment houses, or six that have been noted, steadily downgraded their outlook on Genting Singapore. Is Union Gaming taking a similar viewpoint with regards to Genting's?
That's right. So, in fact, we actually downgraded the stock towards the end of February. And at that point, we were the only analyst with a whole rating. Everybody else was buy. So some of them have caught up with us. And at that point, it is really our thesis was, you know, the VIP story, which has actually worked really well for Genting over the previous 12 months, has kind of played out. We didn't see a lot of upside from there. Now comes the new agreement with the government, which, you know, while there could be a longer-term benefit for the foreseeable future, it's decidedly negative for the company, and I think that's why you saw the rash of downgrades happen last week. And so, yeah, so I think, you know, what you're going to see is depressed earnings relative to consensus for the next many quarters. And then when you think about the expansion, this is a very long-tailed project. You know, the company itself, I think in their press release, said up to 5 years. And so when you think about, you know, when this will pay dividends, it's well outside the range where anybody's going to bake that into valuation today.
We're still speaking to Grant Govertson, an analyst over at Union Gaming. And in your research note for Genting Singapore, you also mentioned that the decision to raise the entry fee levies could possibly even exacerbate or make the issues of problem gambling worse. Now, that's an interesting take. Why is that, Grant?
Sure. And the reality is customers who have problem gambling issues, you know, $150 versus $100 isn't going to stop them. It will deplete their funds quicker, perhaps, in other areas of their life. So I don't think it really does anything. That's not going to deter them, number one. But then number two, and if you look in the press release from the government, not only did they mention problem gambling, but they mentioned casual gambling. They want to also, you know, put the clamps on that. And so this is just somebody who, you know, might go to the IR every now and then just to have fun. That guy will say, well, gosh, it's $150. You know, why am I going? I can actually, if I really want to gamble, I could just fly somewhere else now. And, you know, as could the guys with actual problems, they could go to Cambodia or Kuala Lumpur or Manila, any of these places for that same $150, so they get a free trip out of it. So I think ultimately the raising of the entry levy is quite misguided.
One thing that the government also mentioned a couple of days ago is that they're doing this to head off competition, Grant. And the estimate that they cited was they see about 50 integrated resorts and casinos around Asia over the next couple of years, including the ones in Japan and Korea. Can you talk to us about how competitive Singapore's IR space really is versus some of these existing and upcoming resorts that we're seeing across the continent?
Sure. I think with the likely exception of Japan, it's going to be hard to beat the IRs in Singapore just from a wow factor, an experience factor. They're already, I mean, you think about MBS, it's changed the skyline. Everybody knows it. It's kind of been the dream of Japan to have something like that. The good news for Singapore, though, is geography relative to the rest of Asia. And so, you know, while Japan might introduce IRs that are even more spectacular than Singapore, they're far enough away geographically that I don't think you're going to lose a measurable amount of customers to Japan from Singapore. I mean, Singapore will still, you know, own or dominate that part of Asia with, you know, Malaysia and Indonesia, et cetera, simply because it's the most convenient for them. And other than some of the rarefied air of VIP customers, gambling is generally a very locals and convenience-oriented proposition. So that won't change. You know, when you think about the non-VIP revenue story in Singapore, it should remain unchanged. You might lose some VIP guys to Japan, but by and large, I would say Singapore will retain the most attractive IRs in Asia, excluding Japan.
And do you think it's fair to even compare some of these integrated resorts and casinos to Macau at the moment?
Absolutely. I mean, if you were to put Marina Bay Sands or RWS, which is, of course, they're very different animals. In Macau, they've got all the bells and whistles and then some. So they actually compare very favorably to the Macau casino resorts today.
Grant, it's arguable also to say that the big driver for the gaming industry in Asia is the Chinese overseas gambler who does frequent the likes of Singapore, Macau, the Philippines. But we do know that the Chinese economy is starting to slow down. And every so often we get a scare that they're going to clamp down on some gambling activities in China. Are there any headwinds from the Chinese economy and Chinese regulation that might impact behavior on mainland gaming tourists who come to markets like Singapore, Macau, or the other aforementioned ones?
Sure. And in fact, we're already seeing that a little bit. And if you look at the gaming revenue picture where I'm at in Macau, the last few months have been flat to slightly negative. And that's clearly an economic issue in mainland China. Again, at least I would say there's some protection being that Singapore's customers aren't just Chinese, but they're Malaysian and Indonesian, et cetera. So there's a little bit of insulation there relative to, say, markets like Manila, which is a lot more dependent on Chinese VIPs, for example, and, of course, Macau. So, but, you know, I think the reality is we're taking it on a day-by-day basis. The economy is still moving forward in China. There has been some pockets of brightness, and I think certain industrial reports that have come out over the past few weeks. So we're cautiously optimistic that the Chinese economy will be robust enough to support the IR picture throughout Asia. And, you know, keep in mind that the increase in outbound Chinese just travelers, forget about IRs for a minute and gambling, that number continues to grow nicely, you know, on a year-over-year basis. So you certainly are seeing more just casual tourists coming out of China, which, of course, is also beneficial for the resorts, too.
And finally, Grant, I just want to go back to Genting Singapore. Can you give us the target price for Genting Singapore at Union Gaming, given the downgrade?
Sure. So, like I said, we're hold-rated and have been now for a few months, and our most recent target price is $1 even. So stock's trading at 98 cents as we speak, so it's pretty much right on top of our target price. You know, this is the type of story where I think, you know, given the valuation, and it's trading at a much, much cheaper multiple than Marina Bay, and I think deservedly so, but, you know, if this stock gets, you know, say, down to a 90 cent number, it gets a lot more compelling. And then, of course, you'd have the optionality for Japan, you know, in there too, you know, should Genting win a Japan license.
Just have to wait for the waters to stop being so choppy before we start to see how all this plays out. Grant Govertson from Union Gaming, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon and speaking to Money FM about where all these developments leaves the integrated resorts in Singapore.
My pleasure, JP.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.
Thank you for your time, sir.